Good evening all and welcome. My name is Celeste Dornchak and I'm the Vice President of Foundation and Development at Clara Moss Medical Center. Thank you for joining us this evening for the Medical Center's virtual sports panel featuring David Deal and friends. Joining me for the program are Dr. Mary Ellen Klein, President and CEO of Clara Moss Medical Center, Robert Gassione Jr., Vice Chairman of the Foundation Board of Trustees, David Deal, Honorary Chairman of the Virtual Sports Panel, and special guest Mike Garofolo. I would like also to acknowledge our Chairman of the Virtual Sports Panel and of the Foundation Board of Trustees, Robert Gamba, whose efforts and generosity are deeply appreciated. Bob is unable to join us this evening, but sends his warm regards and thanks to you all. I'd also like to extend a very special thank you to all of our supporters, and especially our lead sponsors, Prismatic Development Corporation, Nanina's in the Park, Park Savoy, and Park Chateau, the medical staff at Clara Mass, Hudson Incorporated, WJ Post. Before we begin, I want to clarify a few details for you to ensure a very smooth program. I assure you, you are not the only one here. The audience is not visible, but there are many, many of you. All audio lines are in listen-only mode. The panel will begin shortly, and we encourage questions from you for David and Mike. To ask a question tonight, please provide them in the Q&A panel on the right hand of your screen. David and Mike will be able to see your questions there. We will also be conducting our silent auction this evening, and to see the terrific auction items, please text Clara Golf, that's one word, C-L-A-R-A-G-O-L-F, to 76278. We encourage and are grateful for your participation. Once again, that's Clara Golf, one word, to 76278. Bidding will end on Thursday, August 20th at 7 p.m. Finally, this webcast is being recorded and a replay will be made available in the coming days. On with the program now. The Foundation works very closely with our Foundation Board of Trustees to achieve our goals. I am delighted to introduce Robert Gassione Jr., Vice Chairman of the Clara Moss Foundation Board.
Okay, thank you, Celeste, and thank you everyone for joining us tonight. As many of you know, this event is in lieu of our in-person golf invitational. This became a virtual event due to COVID-19. We are still fortunate to have good friends who have continued to support us during this unprecedented time. Please let's take a moment to acknowledge our very generous sponsors. Proceeds from this event will support the critical needs of our hospital's healthcare heroes who are on the forefront of this global crisis as they continue to provide state-of-the-art care for our patients. Thank you, everybody, and make sure we all enjoy the evening.
Thank you, Bobby. Clara Moss Medical Center was designated the Essex County hotspot during the height of the pandemic, and we faced significant challenges. Under the leadership of our president and CEO, Dr. Mary Ellen Klein, her team provided unparalleled and compassionate care to each of our patients every day. Dr. Klein is slated to have been with us this evening, but unfortunately is experiencing some technical difficulties, which at this juncture has prohibited her from joining us. We hope she will be able to join us toward the end of the program. So with your kind permission, I'd like to share with you Dr. Klein's message. Dr. Klein extends a very big thank you to Robert Gamba, David Deal, and Robert Gassion Jr. for their leadership, and to Mike Garofolo for joining us tonight. In addition, Mary Ellen recognizes Robert Gassion Sr., who is the chairman of our hospital board of trustees, and all of the members of our boards of trustees and the golf committee. Throughout this public health crisis, we have been humbled by your generosity. As your trusted health partner, we stand together with our communities and want to assure you that your safety and well-being are always our most important priorities. We will continue to forge ahead in preparing for the healthcare needs of our communities and ensuring the safety of our patients and staff. Dr. Klein continues, this spring and into the summer, I saw firsthand our frontline staff give nothing short of their all to protect and care for our patients and each other. Our Clara Moss family is truly special, and I thank all of you. But the need is still great, and your continued donations make a meaningful difference. Please support our silent auction or make a donation if you are able. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful evening. So we are gathered tonight to hear some insider information from our very dear and long-standing friends, David Deal and Mike Garofolo. As you know, David is a former New York Giant and a two-time Super Bowl champion and has been the honorary chairman of our Golf Invitational for the past 5 years. After playing 11 years his entire professional football career with the New York Giants, David has become one of the NFL's top analysts and personalities. David, we are so honored to have you join us each year as our honorary chairman, and even more thrilled to have you with us tonight to present this sports panel with Mike Garofolo, Fox Sports One NFL insider. David and Mike, I turn the program over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Celeste, and thank you very much for the warm welcoming. We couldn't be more excited to be hosting this Chalk Talk panel covering everything with the NFL. Obviously, we would much rather be in person for our fifth annual Clara Moss Golf Invitational for charity, but this is what we all have to do. As they always say, the great ones adjust, and I'm very fortunate to have a friend that I've had for over a decade now, which sounds pretty crazy, Mike Garofolo on with me to have this Chalk Talk. A native of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, you know, he graduated from LaSalle University and got right into the broadcasting and sports world, covering for USA Today and for AP, the Philadelphia Eagles. And then he wisened up in 04 and turned from the dark side and came to the New York Giants, covering the Star Ledger from 04 to 11. So he was with us from the start of when Coach Coughlin took over to our two Super Bowls in 42 and 46, and now continues his work in progress throughout the NFL Network and throughout NFL media. We've all seen his alerts on whether it's Twitter or on the NFL Network bottom ticker. We all know when it comes to football and the inside aspect of it, Mike Garofolo is the guy to go to. So I am very proud and excited to have a friend like Mike Garofolo step up and to have this Chalk Talk with me.
David, thank you for having me, David. Two things. One, I received a text while driving. I showed some responsibility. I didn't get back. So that Fox Sports One bio, I was supposed to update that. That was my fault. That was where I was previously, now at the NFL Network. So my bad on that. David, usually we're doing this sitting at Montclair Golf Club.
Yeah.
People have a couple of pops. There's cigar smoke in the air. You're hearing the tee shots of the foursomes that are going off late. So this is very different for us. But I do want to say one thing, particularly about you, because you were a guy who started your career playing right guard. Then it was out to right tackle. They said, well, we signed a right tackle, so can you move to left guard? And we the left tackle isn't playing well. Can you go to left tackle? Well, we just drafted a left tackle. Can you move back inside the guard? Hey, the left tackle got hurt. You know, I mean, you were a guy who did whatever you had to do to not only succeed individually, but help the team succeed in your NFL career. And the fact that we are here tonight, a lot of people would have said, you know what, COVID's kicking our butts. We're going to punt them this year. We'll see you in 2021. David Deal said, absolutely not. We are going to get together. We are going to help Clara Moss Hospital, as well as those healthcare workers who have been on the front line. So, David, I commend you. And much like pro sports right now, you would be hearing applause. We're not hearing that. So maybe we'll pipe in some crowd noise. And I'll give you all the props in the world for pulling this together, my friend.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
All right, everyone, I just want to remind you, don't forget to check out the silent auction. You can register by texting Clara Golf to 76278. Also, the Clara Moss Putting Challenge is in full swing, pun intended. We want to see the most creative, risky, crazy putt and challenge a friend. See if that friend can do better. Post it on social media with the hashtag Clara Putting Challenge. Check out some good ones now on the Clara Facebook page. All right. We've already got questions rolling in. So we do want to hear your questions. I want to get to them. I've already taken up enough time, but I'll start off. David, you've been to the Giants facility. You're very much involved in their broadcast operations. So you've seen what it's like. It's very different. Describe to us what's going on there and how you feel like the players and the coaches are going to be able to focus on football given everything else that's going on.
You know, obviously it's a very different situation, and that's something that people have brought up to me is like, have you ever imagined a circumstance like this? And I said somewhat, but not to this extent, because if you remember in 2011, we had the NFL lockout. So we didn't report till July 29th, till training camp. But with that said, gyms were still open. Society was completely free. We were working out. Players were traveling from city to city to get those workouts in so that when you came in July 29th, it was a seamless transition. It's completely different now compared to Zoom meetings, Zoom virtual workouts. It doesn't bring what you need to the attention of a football team under a new head coach. And that's why this time for the New York Giants right now is so important with a new first-year head coach and Joe Judge, because when you think about an offensive room, let's just think about the offensive team meeting room. You go through your goals and objectives as an offense, but the minute that you do that, you break off into your wide receiver room. You go into your offensive line room. The quarterbacks go into another room. Everybody has their specified skill that they hone in on, but it takes all 11 on the field to come together to communicate and be on the same page to have an effective not only play but offense and team. So when you think about the times that they're in now, they're busing from MetLife Stadium over to the Giants facility because they're in their own quarantine bubble. They've separated themselves from it. But the one thing that I will say when it comes to it, today was the first day of full pads, and you felt that competitive energy. You heard it. It just reminded you of what it felt like to sit there and watch that live NFL action. So this is so important, this time for the Giants, not only just for the physicality, but the mental reps and for the coaches to understand the strengths and weaknesses of their roster, because with no preseason games, if you're not making plays in practice, especially for those younger players on special teams, don't think that you're going to make the roster just by getting by.
One more from me, and then we're going to get to the questions rolling in already here. Joe Judge already trying to establish himself with this new group of players. And that's another thing, not only learning the system, they have to learn each other. They didn't have that off season the way you usually have it. No names on the jerseys. Judge has not been mentioning the players by name when discussing with the media. And then some laps today for guys who made mistakes. I kind of liken it to the end of the Jim Fossil era, where things were maybe a little loose, into Tom Coughlin, and that culture changed that shocked a number of guys. You were there for a transition. Does it feel that way? And do you agree with how Judge is approaching things right now?
I do agree with the way that he's coaching and the way that he's handling the Giants organization and getting it back to the championship culture. It's very clear to see over the last two seasons how discipline and not the, paying attention to the details at hand, especially in the fourth quarter, cost the Giants football team to lose games that they could have been close in. It wasn't anything that the other teams did. It was the self-inflicted wounds they caused on themselves. So when you go back to Coach Judge's press conference, we're going to be sound fundamentally and technique-wise, and we are going to be a damn disciplined football team. And you see that with the accountability that not only he has to the other coaches, but the accountability that he's putting on the leaders throughout the entire football team. So it does remind me of going from country club under Jim Fossil to boot camp under Coach Coughlin. And you saw the results that it had on our football team long term and the benefits that it had building the chemistry and camaraderie, that it doesn't matter about the expectations people have on the outside. If you can't look each other in the eye from the time that you get into this building until you leave and sell out, you're not going to be able to go to sleep without a single regret.
And the last two head coaches were in and out. The Giants don't want to do that again. So
yeah.
If you're not on board with Joe Judge, you might be the one that's out of here. All right. We've got a question in from Anthony Gagliano. He'll lead us up here. He said, do our infectious disease doctors at Clara Moss see any lessons from the Major League Baseball, NHL, and NBA playoffs that can be learned to help the NFL in keeping players safe as they practice and get ready for a possible upcoming regular season? Mary Ellen is with us. Mary Ellen, did you hear that question? Hello, she's so excited to be with us. Did you hear that question? We'd love to hear your answer on that one. We got to get her unmuted.
We have to unmute her.
We have to unmute her. You're inching your way. There we go. I think we got her.
Thank you. I finally figured it out, and I'm not going to dare answer that question. I leave it in your good hands. I'm tossing it back down the line.
Well, just wanted to check in and make sure everything was working. We've got video. We've got audio. David, are you paying attention to what's happening in other sports? Because that's what's going to apply to the NFL. Right now, the numbers are low for the NFL, but this is the easy part. Pretty soon, we're going to start mixing teams and putting guys on the field.
No question. I mean, this is the easy part. And the tough thing that when you sit here and try to gauge other professional sports like Major League Baseball or the NHL or the NBA, we're talking about the size of a roster of 53, plus when you add on coaches, medical staff, trainers, compared to a roster of 13 to 15 with a small number of coaches. So you're talking about a completely different demographic of players, especially when we're talking about a contact sport. Major League Baseball, social distancing is already built into it. As an offensive lineman, I'm pushing, I'm sweating, I'm breathing on another player on the other team, play in and play out. So I think the big thing is number one, how they have kind of set this bubble where they've separated themselves. They are still in training camp. They're getting tested after the first stretch of it pretty much every other day. But with that said, the big question happens is, what happens when training camp is over and you can't have your entire team locked down in a hotel together, because then you're opening up yourself and being susceptible to your family members, to your friends that are around you. So I think that's going to be the big thing that they have to make sure that they manage moving forward. It's not just the training camp aspect of when they get into the regular season. And that's one of the things that when we sit here and we talk about this year, anything can happen. All it takes is for one wide receiver room to get capped up, and now all of a sudden two or three players have COVID. You have a completely different roster that you're looking at than the start of the season. We haven't had a quarterback other than Matthew Stafford. What happens during the regular season if one of these starting quarterbacks is out? That changes the complete dynamic and complexion of not only that week, but the NFL season in itself.
David, I'm focusing on your NFL roots, but Dennis Wilson is here, and he says you are a Big Ten alum. Let's talk a little bit about what's happening in college football. What are your thoughts on the Big Ten's decision to not play football this year or this fall? We're going to try potentially in the spring. And what about the parents and players on the teams that are advocating for a season? They're still fighting back, those players are.
I mean, I couldn't imagine if I was going into my senior year of college with the dreams and aspirations of playing in the NFL and not having that opportunity. And I understand when we're talking about the young demographic, it doesn't hit as hard as the elderly and the older with pre-existing conditions. But with that said, you still have older trainers, you have older coaches that can be susceptible to it. And let's face it, when it comes down to it, we know the big thing that it is it comes down to money. this is the one time when it comes to the NCAA that the term student athlete doesn't pan out well, because the teams and the universities aren't getting paid off of the big bolster that they get from all those ticket sales, from all those weekends with the college season going on. And when you take that away and you're sitting here saying, we're not having college and we're just going to have classes virtually, how can you separate your regular student from the athlete and say, well, you're a regular student, you can't come to campus, but we're just going to get the athletes here? It doesn't work out both ways.
If you were theoretically in your final year of college football and they said no football in the fall, but we're going to try to play in the spring, and you had your eyes on the NFL draft, how would you handle that? Because that could be something that a lot of guys are going to have to think about.
I would play. I would play in the spring if I had to, because, you know, one of the things that you have to think about is I was a fifth-round draft pick. I needed to prove myself because, like you were discussing my NFL career, that was my early college career, bouncing around, playing each and every different position. So when I got to my senior year, that's when I started at one position, and I got to prove myself that I was an NFL prospect. But the difference that when you talk about this is Trevor Lawrence. We know that he's going to be the first quarterback taken off of the board. That's where the big decision comes into play, because when you have the opportunity that he's going to have, and you think now with the spring, get moved to the spring, that's usually the time where you're doing mini camps with your new team and OTAs, getting used to it. We know that the NFL can push that back, but we've seen where players have gotten hurt, like Jalen Smith, like other players that have played in bowl games or those last college games, gotten hurt, and it completely affected their draft stock and their future.
Potentially some breaking news if you answer this the right way, which I'll then tweet out and put on NFL Network. But Elizabeth Jameson says, David, we need you. Would you go back to play for the Giants, please? Hold on, let me get my phone ready.
Well, if I could go back and play as a 265-pound tight end and not play off of the tackle, then I would come back. It's the best of both worlds. I get to block. I get to go out on some passes and some little quick outs there. That would be my comeback to the NFL. But I played 11 unbelievable seasons. Played once a Giant, always a Giant. Was a New York Giant lifetime member. And the great thing about my career is, number one, when I look at my Super Bowl rings, I never think of anything individually. I think about my teammates, the seasons that we had together. And then the last thing that I'll say is, I was fortunate enough to walk away from the game on my own terms. Didn't have concussions. I'm standing upright. My knees, my back, my hips feel great. Now I want to be the dad that I've always wanted to be and have the time to do it.
Elizabeth, I don't know what she does for a living. She might be a journalist, because that was the question to soften you up. And then the real question kind of behind it. She said, how do you stay healthy and what do you do as a daily routine as a precaution to avoid COVID?
You know, the thing that I obviously do is a lot of vitamin C, D, and zinc. I take my supplements. I'm a routine guy. You know that when it came to game day or practice, you know, that's the thing that you have to do in uncircumstances and when there's adversity around you. Stick to a routine. I do my Peloton. I get out on walks. I don't lift the weights like I used to, but I still get in body weight activities. And that's the biggest thing is that when I retired from the NFL, I was the oldest guy in the locker room at 33 years old after 11 seasons. You have a long life to live, and if you don't take care of your body immediately and change being a 320-pound offensive lineman and then converting to regular life, that's where we've seen a lot of athletes fall into physical and health conditions that are really destabilize them long-term in their life. So I was blessed and fortunate to have the career that I had, and my competitive advantage was I walked away from every game and every practice without a single regret, knowing I was prepared and I can learn from the lesson that when you lose.
Listen, a lot of guys playing, they have high BMI because they're putting on the weight. That's the one thing that I tell people, and I know that that was something for you, eating and drinking protein.
Every 2 hours. Yeah.
Waking up in the middle of the night to do it. And that puts you potentially at risk, and that's why a lot of guys this year had their health in the forefront of their mind as they approach this, and guys opted out, and even a lot of other guys who didn't opt out at least considered it.
Yeah.
I thought when the union first raised that, I thought maybe this is some kind of negotiating ploy because they're worried about the numbers and the financials. Guys were really taking their health into consideration. I don't know how many conversations you had, but you got that sense, right?
Without a doubt. I mean, this is uncharted territory when it comes to NFL players choosing their health over money. You and I have seen time and time again when you're sitting there and you've had to put players on the sideline. Why do you think that there's an individual evaluator each game day when it comes to a concussion? Because a player might sit here and say, I'm a special teams guy. I can't pull myself off. It's going to cost me my career. And it took somebody else to take those players off of the field outside of the organization. It's no different now. You see when it comes to not only shoulder pads, but the helmets, the equipment that players are wearing, they're so much more educated on what they have on their body. And it comes right now to this when it comes to COVID. We know that the life shelf of an NFL player is less than 3 years. And some of these players are thinking smart enough to choose my long-term health than a short extended period of time that I may get sick, not let alone the people around me and my family to get sick.
David, some good news. Well, that wall behind you, you know, you can see all that memorabilia there. If you pan right or left, there's some bare spots because you took some stuff off that wall, you signed it, and you put it up for the silent auction. Right now, I can tell you, we have raised more than $5,000 so far. And don't forget, you can register by texting Clara Golf, one word, C-L-A-R-A, Golf, to 762-78 if you want to get involved there. We've got until Thursday, so don't jump off to go there. You can still listen to more of what David has to say.
Mike, you're right. I did take some of the things off of the wall. I have one of my game helmets signed up for auction, and I actually have the opening of MetLife Stadium. I have my game jersey signed and up there as well.
Awesome. Awesome stuff right there, and plenty more to bid on as well. Again, up to $5,000 so far for our folks at Clara Mouse and our frontline healthcare workers. All right. Jason Bennett is one of several who have asked about Daniel Jones. You touched on this a little bit already. I want to kind of tie it in with Jason Garrett because he's now coming to the Giants as an offensive coordinator. Your buddy, your teammate for
He was. Okay. He was my backup quarterback my rookie season. Yep.
That's correct. In 03. So tell me, I mean, you've seen his philosophy play out as a coach and you know what he's about as a guy. So what kind of effect will it have on Daniel Jones? How do you think he'll treat him going into the season and how will it benefit Jones?
I think what I've seen so far in practice and what I've heard throughout the offseason, they have a great relationship. They've been in touch. You know, when you're out there watching practice, they're walking on the field talking together. They're walking off and they're communicating with one another. And one of the things that I love that Jason Garrett brings is an offense that is tailored to the strengths of Daniel Jones. Heavy run predicated with play action built off of it. And it's diverse. We've seen with DeMarco Murray where it was more about setting the edge and getting the outside zone scheme running. And when it comes to Ezekiel Elliott, they will really want to set it up with the inside zone scheme in between the tackles and then have play action and bootlegs all built off of it. So the run looks identical to the play action passing off of it. That is the strength of Daniel Jones. When you have a quarterback that's mobile that can escape out the backside of the pocket, it forces a backside linebacker and a defensive end to hold. And then also, what has Jason Garrett built off of that? Small passes that are extension of the run, quick slants, wide sticks. That's one thing if Giants fans are excited about something that's coming back, the utilization of the tight end position. Evan Engram, if he stays healthy, this could be a career year for him, and he can set up some big numbers. So I love the fact that they have a run-predicated offense that allows this offensive line to gel together and be more aggressive by being run-predicated and a quarterback that can use his legs in the right way. So I'm really excited to see the offense that the Giants roll out in 2020.
Big money being thrown around the tight ends recently.
Big money.
So if Evan Engram does deliver some big money – in his future. I did have a question regarding money. Elizabeth Jameson said, if the NFL continues without fans, how will the teams adjust as far as contract goes? Will players continue to make the money they do now? If you don't mind, David, I can answer this.
So you got it, yep.
I spent weeks covering this one. There's going to be a drop in revenue this year. So next year, the salary cap is going to dip. What the NFLPA and the NFL did, they said, well, we don't want this thing to fall off a cliff. That's not good for anybody. That doesn't help teams conduct business. So they put a floor in. That salary cap won't be any lower than $175 million down from $200 million. And they're trying to smooth it out over the years to come because, again, The numbers are going to be down. We know the Giants are amongst the teams that will not have any fans. The Chiefs today, though, said they're hoping at 22% capacity to start the season. So hopefully we get in as many fans as we can going forward. But the financials have sort of been worked out and will be worked out as we go forward here. I did have another question about the Giants, though, off of what you just said, because what you need an offensive line to do those things that Jason Garrett wants to do. And as much as we talked about the pass rushers and Eli Manning, Plaxico Burress, some of these elements of your team, I still don't think we gave enough credit to you guys as an offensive line, the continuity, the hard workers, and they've been trying to get back there. What do you think you see now, particularly because they did lose Nate Solder, who I know hasn't been as good as they'd hoped, but he opted out. So what do you see with this line right now?
Yeah, I see a line that has some continuity coming back, and I see young players stepping up like Will Hernandez going into his third year. He's got a lot on his plate, not only because it's his third season, but he's going to have a rookie playing left tackle next to him to battle at the position of center. I think right now Nick Gates has a head on the rest of the guys, and I think he can solidify that interior, that pocket. We know that Kevin Zeitler at the right guard position, and with Nate Solder opting out, Cam Fleming, who was signed during the offseason, will be starting pretty much at that right tackle position. The great thing of him, he understands and knows this offense out cold from his time in Dallas, being coached by Mark Colombo and by Jason Garrett. So he brings in familiarity with it as well. But you hit the nail on the head. When we played together, we all got old at the same time, and they haven't been able to rebuild it. I think that's one of the emphasis that we know that Dave Gettleman has put on this offense and on the offensive line and the defensive line. So I think that you're going to see a different group up front. And now the thing that I love to see out of the players on the Giants offensive line, these are players that could have fit in our offensive line room with their mentality.
Let's stick with the offensive line questions, because Kimberly Kinoy, who must be an Eagles fan, she's, I'm so focused on the Giants because I know we've got a lot of them because of the area, but we've got some Eagles fans. And you respect them, right? Yeah, certainly on game day when they're throwing stuff at you, I'm sure, right?
Of course I do. But Kimberly,
I'm sorry.
You want to get into the Eagles offensive line, I take it.
I do, but Kimberly Kinoy, she was one of the more well-behaved Eagles fans, I'm told. So we're gonna answer her question. Right? Hey, listen, I grew up in Philly. I can say these things. She wants to know, Jason Peters, the longtime left tackle, moving inside to guard. We call that pulling a David Deal. How do you think Peters is going to be able to handle that? And will that affect him? You know, you're outside and all of a sudden you're inside.
You know what? I think that was a great fill of the void of Brandon Brooks, who obviously tore his Achilles and is out for the year. That's a tough thing for him to deal with. And when you think about Jason Peters filling into that position, you have Kelsey at center, Peters at right guard, and Lane Johnson at right tackle. I would say that's a solidified right side of your offensive line. And one of the things that will transition from him playing left tackle to right guard was he was a big jump setter. He wasn't a guy that always set it vertical. He wanted to get on you quick and beat you to the point of intersection, whether it was a 3, 5, or 7-step drop. So now moving him inside with his long arms and his frame, he's going to be able to be more aggressive in a confined area of space and be able to be more aggressive doing it. So I think that it's going to be a seamless transition for Jason Peters.
All right, I want to get on the Jets, too, because we can't forget about them. We've got some Jets folks. I don't know that anybody's got high expectations for them this year. There is a thought with Joe Douglas that they're moving in the right direction, but it could still take some time. My question is, when you see Jamal Adams say the things that he said publicly, not even just as an – I mean, he came out and said the things he said about Adam Gase, and Gase did get some support from some guys. How does Gase now maintain that locker room? Even though Adams is gone, how does he now get the respect of the guys and keep it?
I think the best way to be is honest and fair, and more importantly, being transparent with your football team. You know, you always say that at the end of a game, Coach Kaufman would be like, whether we win or lose, it wasn't me, it was you guys. But when we lose, I'll take the hit for the football team. And when that comes into play, and when you've heard that back and forth, especially from a leader, it does change the way that a head coach reflects and changes his football team. Think about in 2006, Tiki Barber and Coach Coughlin had their disagreements, and we heard it get out into the papers and under the sidelines. What happened in 2007? I was part of the leadership committee. Coach Coughlin at that point changed his attitude and said, okay, we've been in this for 4 years now. I know my veteran leaders, and I can lean on them more to send the message to this football team than just me, because if you continue to do it, people will start washing it out and not really paying attention. But when you hear it from your peers and from the leaders of your team, it changes the dynamic of everything. So I believe that Adam Gase will take that to heart, and you will see it in the way that he handles his football team in 2020.
The Jets are another team, by the way, still trying to get their offensive line together.
Yeah.
And they spent a lot of resources, free agency, the draft. Mekhi Becton comes in. I don't know how much you studied.
Free agency, yep.
Yeah. So do you see that unit starting to come together? And again, I don't know how much you studied Becton ahead of the draft.
I do. Yeah. I think that's definitely – I think the one thing that they're going to do is be just like the Giants when they mesh in the start of the season. It's going to be predicated on using Le'Veon Bell and Frank Gore to put Sam Darnold in position to succeed so they're not in third and longs chasing chains for an entire football game. So I think that's the complexion that you're going to hear not only with the Giants and with the Jets, but any offensive line in the NFL that has more than one or two interchangeable pieces that they didn't have before. Before this season, the last five seasons, probably from 2014 until 2019, the question I got the most during the first 5 weeks of the NFL season was, how come offensive lines aren't playing as good as they have in the past? It takes time to build it. It's no different now than when you haven't had an offseason with OTAs and minicamp, and now you're just going into training camp. I see that curve even trending further if it's not a team that's predicated on running the football.
You got to hit, and they don't hit as much in practice. So the teams that can get that work in and figure out a way to build that continuity, whether it's on game day or whatnot, are at an advantage. Let's go around the league real quickly. You guys won the Super Bowl in 2007.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it was a run of contracts. I believe even you got one that offseason.
Yes, I did.
Plaxico, who didn't practice till he got one, or at least close to when he got one, and some other guys. The Chiefs, you're seeing the opposite now. These guys are taking backloaded contracts, including their quarterback, who's going to make $500 million when all said and done, but yeah, the structure is allowing the team to say, is that scary for the rest of the league to see these guys working with the team to allow for flexibility to keep these guys together?
You know what? I think that it is, because it reminds you of the time before free agency when you could keep a team together and keep those starters together for a long period of time. Do I think COVID changed things for this football team? Absolutely, because the minute you win a Super Bowl, every other organization is trying to get your coordinators, your assistant coaches, the players on your roster. They weren't able to do that this much during this time because of not being able to travel, not being able to have those interviews. So I do think that that's held teams closer together from 2019 going into 2020. But you think about Patrick Mahomes backloading, knowing that they had to pay Chris Jones and Travis Kelce. Granted, it's for $500 million. There's no complaints from anybody when it comes to that money. But when you think about that, he could have had more if he would have been your typical player and thought only about himself and not about the salary cap and surrounding yourself with players that are accessible and going to be on your roster for a long period of time. Seattle Seahawks were a prime example of this. They won. They paid everybody. Nobody's there anymore but Russell Wilson and the linebacker. So when you think about that with the Kansas City Chiefs, and thinking that this season they've got 10 returning starters coming on both sides, look out, NFL.
No doubt the quarterback doing that and doing it early sent a message to other guys as well, because who are you now to demand a different structure when the best player in the league, perhaps for the next decade, accepted a different structure? Brady, talk. What do you think?
I mean, you know, when you see the pictures of full pads like today, Tom Brady's a Buccaneer. Cam Newton's a Patriot. We used to see these pictures that were doctored. Now it's real. Now it's true. And when you think about Tom Brady going to an offense with Bruce Arians, where that's going to be a different type of atmosphere completely. You know, when you think about the time that they was under Bill Belichick, it was no different than when we were with Coach Coughlin. You know, there'd be games where you won games, and the next day, hey, you think it'd be highlights. Oh, no, they were lowlights. All the plays that you got wrong in the game, you'd walk out of that meeting thinking, did we even win the game yesterday? It doesn't feel like we did. But that was the type of demand that he had on himself, and they treated him no different than any other player on the roster. So now going to Tampa, rejuvenating his career in a different atmosphere with a different offense, and more importantly, with a rebuilt offensive line in front of him with the weapons outside, who couldn't be excited to see Tom Brady as a Buccaneer?
I do still want to see how his philosophy of get the ball out meshes with Bruce Arians, who likes to push it down the field.
Push it down, yeah.
I mean, look, in the end, it's not like they can't figure out a happy medium, and it's not like Brady doesn't throw down the field at some point.
Yeah.
We may be exaggerating that a bit. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But also to think about that, Brady pushed the football downfield when he had Randy Moss. They haven't had that type of elite weapon other than Julian Edelman. They haven't had that player that can stretch the field. So if you don't have that player, you've got to change your scheme and your game plan going into games, into the short and intermediate passing route. So I see him expanding this playbook and his arm vertically a lot this season.
You mentioned Cam briefly.
Yeah.
I think if it's anywhere else or any other coach, Cam being as injured as he's been,
he's the starter. He's the starter.
No, I know that, but all the players that are opting out, I don't know that anybody would look at that situation and say, oh, that team's going to make the playoffs. But because it's the Patriots, because it's Belichick, they're saying, oh, they'll figure something out, that Belichick will make it happen. Your thoughts? Is this team making the playoffs?
I think that they're making the playoffs because you bring in a quarterback that is multidimensional and can fit to the offense that they want to run. Think about the way that they manipulated the game plan, whether it was Jacoby Brissett or Jimmy Garoppolo. It's going to be no different now than when you have a Cam Newton, like we were talking about Daniel Jones, to keep the backside of a defense honest. They're going to utilize his legs to the most that they can because they know that it's a one-year prove-it deal for Cam Newton, and they're going to get the most tread on the tires that they can. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, he's going to be moving on. So it was a bet that is in the best favor of the Patriots. And I think when you look at their offense, yeah, I think that they've stepped up and utilized things. But let's face it, they won games in 2019 based upon their defense. That's going to be the big timetable for the New England Patriots in 2020. How are they going to respond on the defensive side of the ball, missing as many starters either going to free agency or opting out because of COVID?
And one more with regard to the entire league, because I got a Giants question to get back to
okay.
A second here. Sleeper teams. Who are we sleeping on? NFC, AFC, whatever you got here.
All right. For the AFC, I think a team that people aren't talking about are the Denver Broncos. I think the Denver Broncos, the way that they went through free agency, getting Melvin Gordon, getting A.J. Boye, those were huge, significant additions to their team. Getting Jerry Jeudy through the draft to go with Cortland Sutherland and to go with K.J. Hamler on the outside and a young tight end and Noah Fant. Add Melvin Gordon into the equation. Now you have an offense that is going to run downhill directly at you. And Giants fans may say what they want to say about Pat Shurmur, but the thing that you can't knock him on was the way that he helped develop Daniel Jones last season in his rookie year. Now you have a quarterback like Drew Locke coming into his second on a football team that's predicated on running the football and a Vic Fangio defense. I think that's a team that people are sleeping on in the AFC.
And that's a tough division if they come. Because the Raiders are going to be better. I think the Chargers are going to be better.
I agree. I
know people look at Tyrod Taylor and say, Tyrod Taylor will win football games.
You're
not going to go 5-11 with Tyrod Taylor. So I think they're going to be better. All right, back to the Giants because Desiree Highsmith, this is an inside job. This is
all right.
our folks on our chat here who is handling the IT end of things for us and was able to get Mary Ellen on with us ready to rock. She says, do you have any projections for Saquon season this year? I know you talked about it potentially. Throw out a number, however you want to say what you've got for Saquon this year.
I think Saquon's going to have a monstrous year. I think the fact of when you look at the weapons outside to be able to spread out the defense and not have always that eighth man in the box, I think that's going to be something that's going to be huge for this offense. I think the additions to the offensive line and this offense predicated on running the football, Saquon's going to be utilized, and I see him having the type of season he had his rookie year. Obviously, last year with the injuries and the ankle thing was something that you don't ever want to see a young running back deal with. But I think, what did he show? Toughness by coming back. What's your best ability? Availability. Throughout my NFL career, the only time I felt 100% was the day before training camp. You're going to have problems. You're going to have nicks and bumps throughout the NFL season. But it's about the team that can stay together for 16-plus weeks that are going to do damage, and I think he's going to have that type of season.
All right, and from Naveen Balem, if I'm reading this correctly, you have only two options. I don't think there's a C. It's A or B. Do you give the Giants a 99% or 100% chance of winning the Super Bowl this year. He might be looking through some blue goggles on this one there, Dave.
You know what? I think the Giants are going to have a much better season than they had in 2019. I think the additions to the Patrick Graham as the defensive coordinator, Jason Garrett to the offense, I think that this is a more sound roster with more depth built in than they've had before. Granted, this is the second youngest team in the NFL. The average of these players are under 26 years old. Sterling Shepard is the longest tenured New York Giant currently. It goes to show you the youth of this football team. But I think that this is a season that they continue to get better. The one thing that would hold me from giving that 100%, we got to see how this defense responds. This is an offense that can put up 27 points a game, and they're going to need to with the explosive offenses that these Giants defenses are going to face.
And Elizabeth Jameson is going to bring us home here. She's got the final question. She says, Dave, do you have a podcast or any show in the works? You're awesome, and Football Talk on is on point. Would love to see more of you.
Thank you very much. I'll be doing all my stuff for Giants.com and for MSG, but I will. I think I'm going to be coming out with a nice little podcast, and I'm going to break down offensive lines week in and week out throughout the NFL season.
That's awesome. See, we did break news after all. The David Deal podcast about to drop. I let us know when and where. Tweet it out. It's available wherever fine podcasts are downloaded, I'm sure. Dave, this was awesome. We could have gone on all night.
Yes, we could have.
So I appreciate you having me here, a part of this event. Appreciate the folks at Clara Moss. Don't forget, check out the silent auction. Text Clara Golf to 76278. And don't forget that putting challenge. Check out on the Clara Facebook page. We've already got some things going. So thank you to everyone for having us. Thank you to our sponsors for all the support.
Yep.
And we hope, we very much hope that next year, we're back, and that's that scene I talked about. Adult beverages, cigars, football, golf. But, Dave, I give you all the credit in the world for making this happen in the meantime.
No, thank you very much for joining me, Mike, and thank you very much for everybody from Clara Moss for setting this up and all of our participants today. Like you said, the silent auction is going still, and it will continue through Thursday, so make sure you get on, bid on your auction items that you'd like. And thank you very much once again for supporting Clara Moss, myself, and Mike Garofolo.
Good stuff, David. Celeste, we turn it back over to you for some final remarks.
Thank you so much, Mike. David and Mike, thank you very, very much for your insight and commentary. Just when we think you couldn't outperform last year's panel, you did. And I was getting text messages throughout your presentation about how people were so enjoying this panel. I think you're right. You could have continued for another hour, and I think folks would have been thrilled to stay on. So thank you. Thank you so much. We already look forward to next year. From all of us here at Clara Moss Medical Center, thank you for your attendance and participation. Thank you to the foundation staff and our volunteers for your hard work that helped create this successful event. Remember, the silent auction will continue until this Thursday at 7. And if you're not registered, you may register by texting Clara Golf to 76278. Thank you once again. We so appreciate you. Stay safe, stay well, and good night.
Thank you, everybody.
See you, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.